All right, everyone, it's the Grimlord here, and I got a question for you. Are you ready for some degeneracy? Because it's Grimm's Hentai Corner, and we've got maggot baits. And things are getting crazy, so let's go on right with it. And as if embodying Sandy's summer prayers, tonight, another witch's play of agony was about to begin. After Edna was hauled out of the factory, she reached her hellish final destination, the central pillar of evil power rolling over Cantel's pandemonium. Inside was a room that resembled disgusting entrails. To a normal person, the incredible rotten smell was enough to make one vomit just from breathing. The smell of blood was like 10 fish markets condensed into one, and it was caked into the walls and floor. The smell alone was already crushing Edna's mind, but her natural willpower and pride led her to glare at the men without showing her fear, though that was all the resistance she could muster. The men smiled as if they saw through her. The thugs were armed with blades and guns, while those around Edna looked down on her with derision. One spoke up. "Hey guys, before we feed her to the monsters, why don't we taste her ourselves? Nice idea. Hey lady, you'd prefer that too, right?" And they let out loud, vulgar laughter. They crowded around and displayed their openly violent and sexual urges. "Let go, you scoundrels!" Numerous men shoved Edna down on the cold floor. They exposed her chest, her pale, perky breasts bouncing free. "You can't move because you're lacking blood, right? Gotta eat a stomach full of food to make more, don't ya? But in your case, you eat semen in place of food, right? So we'll feed you lots." "Ah, I don't need that. Damn you, stop, you scum." She had managed to recover from the hole staked to her flesh. However, just as the man said, her body lacked blood and wouldn't obey her commands. "You all need semen to live, right? We're kindly offering to give you some, so it wouldn't hurt to show us some more gratitude." One had already pulled out his erect prick, straddling Edna's stomach and shoving it between her twin mouths. "Ugh, so soft. Feels like they're sucking my cock. Oh my god, that's so lame, guys." "Ah, you cretin, don't touch me with such filth."
No, stop acting so haughty. We've heard that all witches are man-trolling bitches who suck down semen, regardless of how beautiful and well-proportioned they are."
"Silence, you scoundrel!" Edna glared sharply at the man teasing her. He was right about that being standard for witches, but harvesting cum from men of their own volition and getting fucked were completely different.
"You look like you want to say you're different. You're not very persuasive with such a hot body, though. Your bouncy tits are always seducing other men."
Edna's body was well honed, but she retained a fitting amount of fat around her breasts and hips, giving her central curves and an appeal perfect for seduction. The man straddling her body dug his fingers into her springy, soft flesh as he groped her breasts. At the same time, he stroked his rod between them, getting harder.
"They're huge enough for a tit fuck. They're pale and they're pretty, and they spring right back in my hand. Your nipples are fake pink like a virgin girl's, too. You've got great tits."
"Cretin, I'll make it so you never speak again."
Hey, I'm complimenting you here. I'm telling you, getting a tit fuck from boobs like yours is amazing."
The excited man groped her breasts hard, moving his hips as well to rub his swollen shaft against Edna's pale skin. He thrusted his swollen red head towards her lovely face. "I told you to stop. Ah, that reeks. Ah, keep that away."
"Hey, nice smell, right? I have women clean it instead of washing it. You gonna make it nice and clean with your hot tits."
Yeah, I am assuming that nobody takes fucking showers or baths in this world. Like, I don't know why, but they don't. Even though it seemed like they would have, like, electricity to run showers and water. Like, nobody takes a fucking shower in this whole thing. And it's disgusting. Folks, wash your penis. Do what Jordan Peterson says and wash your penis.
"Hey, nice smell, right? Oh, yeah, we already talked about that."
The area around the neck of his cock was packed and coated with yellow dick cheese. Ugh! And the man rubbed it against Edna's unsoiled breasts. And the smegma rubbed off onto her breast. Edna's nose picked up on the smell of rotten cheese.
Oh, good God! Ugh!
"Sir, wash your penis." What a foul stench. Ah, and sticky too. And his body shuddered in revulsion as he rubbed those tacky, fetid dregs of manhood onto her. Ugh. She found honor in wounds of bloodshed and battle, but having this vulgar man sole her skin with his filth disgusted her to the core. She trained daily and fought battles to the death to hone her body. It wasn't meant to be violated by these lowlifes. Cut it out! Do you want me to slice that filthy thing?
Can't do anything right now, can you? Relax, we'll give you plenty of your beloved cock juice.
Enough! I've told you I don't need it!
Shut up, you bitch! I said we're giving it to you, so accept it with some gratitude!
The man held her head down and thrusted his throbbing erection into Edna's face. He then forced it between her lips. Her breath was cut off by the foreign object suddenly stuffing her mouth. Edna groaned with discomfort as her eyes went wide.
Hee hee, I'll pour some semen down that throat, okay? Swallow fucking all of it!
The man held Edna's head firmly in place, swinging his hips and using his lips as a flashlight. A disgusting saltiness fills her mouth. Ugh. And even worse, the foul odor she'd been smelling wasn't far behind, making her nauseous. Disgusting smegma caked the head of the man's prick. A dissolved in Edna's spit rubbed off on her lips and clung to her tongue. Ugh.
Come on, come on. I'll give you lots of cum, so swallow that dick cheese. Quit acting so tough, bitch. You know you can't live without semen.
Even though she could barely move her body, Edna brought all her strength to bear on her jaw. She bent down on the filthy cock, force fucking her mouth.
Ah! Ah! That hurt!
The man drew back in panic. She bit it! Edna choked and spat out the sticky refuse, soiling her mouth.
Be
grateful I didn't bite it clean off. Don't ever bring that repulsive thing near me again. She couldn't work up enough strength, so she only managed to leave bite marks. Still, Edna regained her willful expression as she spoke.
Fuck you!
The man instantly went to a frenzy. Oh. Ow. Ow. Livid with rage and pain, the man punched Edna in the face with his full strength. Ow.
Don't get proud of yourself, you fucking bitch. I'll wreck your fucking face.
He slammed his tightened fists into her mouth over and over again. Edna was helpless against him, unable to draw on her power. Her mouth soon began to swell and blood oozed from her lips.
Hey man, I thought I'd get to fuck some pretty woman pretty, but now you ruined her. Shut up! Hey, bitch! I'm breaking out all your teeth!
The man seized Edna's head and smashed his own into her face. The fuck did you do that for, dude? Blood spilled from Edna's mouth as she let out an anguished cry. White fragments covered in blood fell to the floor with a clack. That wasn't enough, though. One more punch, then another. The muffled cracking of hard bone beneath her wet flesh rang out. Edna's blood-soaked lips were tragically bruised. They were lacerated in spots, swollen so badly they had lost their shape. Of course, all of her front teeth were missing. Her beautiful, commanding looks were gone, and her face was so deformed it was difficult to recognize. Edna shook from the overwhelming pain, crying.
Yeah, what a waste. At least she's a monster who'll grow him right back. Ha ha, it's funny. She looks like a toothless granny.
None showed sympathy toward her destroyed face. They all laughed at her.
Oh, then I'm taking Edna Chine's lost teeth. Some of the gum's still stuck to him. I'm gonna lick these and swallow them.
The mentally challenged man. Hey, they got that right. I'm trying to make him sound as mentally challenged as possible. The mentally challenged with an abnormal fetish picked up Edna's scattered teeth with mad joy and ate them. She felt like even her soul was being tainted after the destruction of her face. The only thing pouring from Edna's mouth was blood and groans. Just trying to speak caused pain to shoot through her mouth.
Looking good now, aren't ya? Now you won't be able to bite down. Be a good girl and suck my cock, toothless.
Finally satisfied, the man shoved his erect dick back into Edna's mouth and relentlessly swung his hips.
Oh,
that's her, not you.
Oh, Feels great with slicking blood. Alright, we're going harder.
The man seized Edna's deformed face and thrust it in hard without hesitation. His tip slammed into her throat, the wounds in her mouth forcing Edna to choke. Regardless, the man was unconcerned, using his hips with wild abandon like she was some kind of sex toy.
Yeah, painful. I wouldn't mind thrusting through your throat with my cock like this. Hey now, we're gonna be using her afterwards. Leave her looking good. When you break a witch, they just heal, right? They're basically a talking sandbag. Whoops, sorry guys.
The men exchanged dark jeers, but Edna no longer had the strength left to react. She could only shed tears as the men continued to use her mouth as a toy.
Shit, my cock's about to burst. Get me off with your hand, Edna-san.
One of the men grabbed Edna's hand. He wrapped his soft palms around himself and tried to force her to stroke.
I'm gonna use Edna-chan for pretty hair. Oh!
Another man grabbed the lock of Edna's hair, sniffed it, and then screamed with excitement. He wrapped her silky hair around his erect pole and started getting himself off. None of them were treating Edna like a person, only a toy. With her face crushed to the point she couldn't be called a woman, she felt pain and frustration. Yet with all her teeth knocked out, she wasn't even able to bite her lip. Being horribly disgraced by these vile men was more than Edna could bear. Still, she tried to endure their rape. She wouldn't submit to violence and lust. At some point, she would force these cretins to taste the same humiliation. She was growing weaker from blood loss, but Edna's heart burned with a hidden flame.
Oh, your damn throat's twitching. Yeah, I'll give you your semen soon.
The man sped up his thrust. He grinded his filthy meat against her throat, filling her head with blood, stench, and an urge to vomit. Her consciousness grew faint, and she couldn't think anymore. His prick swelled, blocking her airway.
Here you go. I'll shoot my cum directly into your body. Take it with gratitude, fuckpot.
What the fuck is a fuckpot?
Alright.
The man forced himself in down to the base.
I'm coming now! Blip, 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 blip.
The fierce stream of cum was forced down her gullet. Edna groaned in agony, her body flopping like a fish. The gluey wad of jizz flushed down her neck, catching in her throat.
You fucking drowning in cum? Well, go ahead and die like that then. Drown in cum, fuck.
Even as Edna coughed and choked, the man just buried his bulging cock deeper as he kept coming. Her mouth was like a clogged faucet. The swell was already bad, so pouring more and more in caused a milky pink mix of cum and blood to spray out of her nose. But both her and mouth and nose stuffed with filth, Edna couldn't breathe. I bet that's with both her mouth and nose. She was about to die, but her cursed body used the cum poured into her to restore her strength. No matter how badly her body was injured, that restoration of her magic powers would automatically heal her completely, save for the mental scars carved into her soul. However, for Edna, having such a low IC become part of her power was an unbearable disgrace. It made her want to puke, but she endured for now. She would hold out.
Oh, she stopped moving. Do you finally understand how blessed you are to have us? Our witch is probably growing cooperative because she wants cum, you know.
None of the men around her had any way of judging her resolve, so they each just rubbed their dicks against her. Not as an act of sex, but as male marking, leaving proof of their conquest. Still holding a prick in her toothless mouth, Edna desperately roused up the will to resist. Yet none of the men let up. They stained her breasts, fingers, and even her hair with their pre-cum, marking the scent onto Edna.
Hey, when you speak with macaque in your mouth, your tongue moves around it nicely. You want more jizz, don't you? Your nipples are hard down there. Seducing a filthy man like me, you must really want some cum, don't you?
The men ridiculed her with words meant to break her self-respect, scoffing vulgarly as they violated her body. Edna knew what the men were after, showing such contempt for her. Still, the noble nature she was born with wouldn't let her overlook it. Her anger and humiliation only grew stronger.
Whoa, I'm almost ready to come. Sorry, let me come all over her breast.
Whoa, her hand's sucking me in. Just wait, I'll come all over your hand, too. I bet you love getting covered in men's cum, don't you?
The men splurted on Edna's body with complete disregard.
No worry, we'll feed you plenty of your beloved cum.
I'm taking his hair, I'm coming all over it, making it mine.
ignore them, endure it, get through this. Edna strongly repeated those phrases to herself as they violated her, even as she shed tears of blood, leaked bloody snot, and spat up bloody spit. The men grinded their hips against her more wildly, violating her windpipe. Her gag reflex forced her to choke multiple times as she writhed in pain. Suddenly, they all let out excited cries as if they'd been matching each other's pace for just this moment. The men surrounding Edna started coming one after another. Of course, her breath was blocked again as they ejaculated into her mouth. Even though she rejected it, their cum forced its way into her body.
I'm coating your pale perky tits with my cum.
I've got her hands and body. Damn witch with your hot body. I'll fucking cover it in cum.
Oh, her hair. I'll mark it, make it mine. Oh.
The milky white gunk blasted out with a disgusting noise, soiling Edna's body. Her pale breasts, her erect nipples on her areola, her immaculate hands, her captivatingly narrow waist, her tight stomach, her glossy hair, each and every one was polluted with that white stain thick with lust and malice. It was nothing like defeat in battle. Her sense of defeat at being brought down as a woman eroded her soul.
Hee-hee, not fighting back? So you really do love it then. I bet you long to get toked to come like this, haven't ya?
Screw you, I don't want this filthy, disgusting, odious slime!
Edna refused to yield, raising her voice to prove it, but even that was consumed by the vile man's sport.
Oh, you're torturing me. Hey, if you go big like that, I'll just have you come more. I'll just have to come more, swallow it all.
She didn't want to accept any charity from such lowlifes, especially when it was rank filth coming from their genitals. Still, once he ejaculated down her throat, she was forced to swallow it. It was pointless to resist. It grew hard to breathe and her throat gulped, walling down the nearly solid clump clinging to her throat. Ugh. The more she screamed, the more it caught in her throat and made her want to vomit. She wanted to throw it all up, but she was helpless with her face held in place and his dick shoved down into its base down her throat. Ugh. His dense cum splattered down her throat, forcing itself down and lets it flow back out of her nose. As badly as she cursed it, suffered for it, and grew nauseous from it, his man juice quickly absorbed into her body. Once taken in, it created the magic power to maintain her life. Her body grew hot with joy. Damn it! Damn it! And it was rife with anger towards the scumbag men, towards her own cursed body for reviving from their cum. She felt nothing but nausea and revulsion towards their cum. The thought of that filth becoming part of her vital energy gave her chills. Would she have to harvest such trash into her body every time she used her supernatural powers? Every time she had to heal her broken body? Edna couldn't help but feel hatred towards her own birth as a witch.
Well, I came. I came, Will. You enjoyed being covered in cum, didn't you?
Shut up! Hurry up and move it.
The man finished his long ejaculation and peered down at her with a sneer. Finally, her rape show was coming to an end. The swelling in her face, the broken lips, and even her missing teeth were steadily healing themselves. If the man wanted to keep his member in her mouth, she'd bite it off soon enough. Just as he resolved herself for that.
Oh, here it comes, I always do this right after I come. Make sure to do your job as a human toilet. What are you?
Just a second to express her confusion. A warm stream started flowing down her mouth. There was a vastly larger volume of it than come. That salty taste and offensive smell could have only been.
Ah, taking a piss after the load is relaxing. I'm glad we've got a nice toilet here too. Urine!
Piss streamed out of the man's dick. Edna was forced to drink it down as quickly as it poured into her mouth. She couldn't swallow fast enough, gagging and spitting up a lot of it. It sprayed from her nose and mouth, covering her face and yellow waste. That shouldn't even rhyme.
What a filthy face, damn. You look like a real toilet, don't you?
Stop it! Don't piss in me!
Drowning in filthy piss and unable to breathe well enough, she demanded he stop, but the man showed no signs of halting his leak.
Even if you ask me to, there's no way I'm stopping. It comes out what it wants.
Again and again, piss flooded Edna's mouth. Too much of the foul, salty excrement poured down Edna's throat, making her gag. The cum lingering in her throat surged back up with the piss and sprayed out of her mouth. It splattered everywhere, soiling her face again. The mix of foul liquid spread down her cheeks, dripping down and coating the floor.
All that cum you swallowed gone to waste. I think you should lick the floor too, right? She should suck up the cum from all over her body too, since she's a human toilet. Clean your fucking self.
Yeah, and it was trapped under the crude men's wretched laughter. Nothing was left to preserve her dignity here. Why, you? Rage burned within her, and she couldn't get her body to move. Even though her body and pride were being crushed so badly, she was powerless. The magic power that maintained her life and its source come were replenished. Still, her bone marrow had yet to generate her own blood, which she needed to exercise her supernatural strength and powers. These men were likely informed of a witch's body and the time it took them to create blood. That was the only explanation for their composure. Before Edna regained the power to fight back, they would probably use that Iron Maiden again to drain her blood. An escapable future of entrapment flashed through her mind. Edna shook with frustration and despair, but she had no choice but to muster up her willpower. Even if the struggle might be futile, she would go insane if she didn't. The thought of losing herself to madness terrified Edna more than death. While her eyes lit with fearless spirit, her face remained covered in wounds, still ruined with blood, cum, and piss. Her body was thoroughly soiled everywhere by the filth those animals produced. Her own self-hatred and resignation at the defilement carved itself upon her soul. Here, there was nothing but a toilet and a trash dump for this vile city, a drainage ditch to flush down the sewage known as lust. And now, Edna was nothing more than another sewer pipe to carry that waste. As Sandy and Isabel took their leave, another man visited Shimon on the top floor. Hey, perfect timing. I was about to go calling for you myself. Shimon generously clapped his hands at the man's arrival, welcoming him. The man's lips drew into a smile that was like a withered flower. He was a tall, lanky white man, nearly 190 centimeters tall, with long sandy blonde hair and wasted cheeks. His unhealthy, melancholic appearance resembled a drug addict. I saw the scene. Now, this guy's Irish, so I'm actually going to do like kind of an Irish accent. Apparently, they don't have anybody that speaks Irish in Japan. I saw the scene. Or something like that. I think we could do that. He muttered that short phrase. His voice almost rang with a happy note. So how'd it look as a former light soldier of the IRA? The agent was thorough, and he's crooked. Some corpses didn't retain the shape, and others showed signs that they were intentionally killed barehanded. It's clear he isn't normal. Shimon clicked his tongue. I'm trying to do an Irish accent here. It's a little hard. Top of the morning to you. Shimon clicked his tongue at the man's unconcealed smile of joy. This ain't no laughing matter. He's got fucking witches on his side. Worst of all, we don't know his goals. Leave witches to witches, though I'll wager no man. Hold on. Leave witches to witches, though I'll wager no man but me can hunt him down. It has to be me, Brian McComhale. See, I can't really do it that well. Regardless of his goals, I do know one thing. I can tell exactly what kind of man we're dealing with. I don't even know what kind of accent that is, folks. I'm trying. Shimon looked at the man, Brian, while picking wax from his ear with his pinky, hardly impressed. This is a man who's cast aside his most treasured ideals. Ideals he once held so strongly, he risked his life in their name. Most would die as empty husks after that, yet. Brian's faintly toned lips curled up. With such a finished man is left with less one goal to adhere to, a cold-hearted, twisted monster like him is born. Good? Evil? Even his own life death bear no interest to him. You can't negotiate either. I tell you, he'll be tenacious. It'll be like fighting a living ghost. I let you talk. How do you know any of this? Shimon asked, belittling him. Finally, unable to hold back, Brian's face drew into a tight grin. I can tell. After all, the same applies. I can tell. After all, the same applies to myself. Brian McCamal, Brian McCamal? Camel? Brian McCamal pronounced, turning the leaf. The smile was already gone from his lips. As he departed the top floor, his empty eyes were trained on his unseen prey, the vision of Tsunaga Shogo. Tsunaga Shogo. I called him Togo in the video, but I meant Shogo. The dark outline of the mountain ridges stretched across the sky, and the moon was settling behind them. Daybreak was nigh. Carol stood near a window in the mansion. Her eyes and their pomegranate glow were turned up at the pale moon. It was impossible to tell what a normal, otherworldly being thought or saw in the moonlight. However, the exhaust of a car was drawing near. When she heard that, the young girl's body sprung into action. She was lighting like a puppy for Tsunaga Shogo's return. The used car's paint was peeling. It was nearly scrap. Its engine cut off in front of the mansion, and then its door opened and spat out Tsunaga. Carol jumped with excitement through the window. Her frame seemed beyond gravity, landing silently in the courtyard. She greeted Shogo as he appeared. Her head's dark eyes and her pomegranate eyes reflected each other. Neither shared a word or smile. Looks like you've recovered enough to fight. Tsunaga muttered after a pause where he inspected Carol's thin frame. His eyes were devoid of sympathy for the woman, let alone lust as a man. He looked at her the same way he would at the gun in his hand. See, that's pretty based right there. Yeah. You're my tool. I'll decide how to use you, and when to use you up. Probably one of the most base sayings I've ever read in a visual novel. The words that followed came in a thoroughly heartless tone. Don't act on your own again. I don't need protecting. I can cut you off myself at any time if I must to survive. Then he passed by Carol without turning back and entered the mansion. The lonely figure of the abnormal girl was left behind in the moonlit courtyard. She stood alone for a while, but then her cold porcelain lips finally moved, like a needle set to a single song on record. Even so, Carol's words reached no one, melting into the moonlight amidst the pre-dawn silence. Chapter 2, The Executioner's Song. Countless faces entered his vision and passed. However, none of their profiles could be identified. Their features and details were missing, like they'd been haphazardly blotted out with dark ink. Those dark faces should have been ones Tsunaga Shogo recognized from the past, yet for whatever reason, he couldn't recall their features. He was vaguely aware of why. He distanced himself too far from them now. Past and present, life and death. No human could cross the absolute barriers between them. That was why he couldn't recall those faces, or so Tsunaga assumed. He changed far too much between them and his present self. He was now living in a different world than those dead. For starters, he no longer had the right to remember them, so he accepted it. Yet. This face alone was different. Those looks penetrated his mind, crossing the barrier between life and death, past and present. Those features were branding onto his soul, crossing time in the cycle of fate. No matter how many days, months, or years passed, he wasn't allowed to forget them, because he was cursed by that face. Perpetual, unabating hatred and anger linked him to that dead woman. Her likeness, pitch-black eyes stared forward at him. He wanted to run from their gaze, but neither his arms nor legs would move. He felt crucified, unable to escape their look. Say it. What do you want to tell me? Tsunaga wailed, pleading with... or willed, rather, pleading with the dark features before him while awash with dreadful terror. In the end, her blood-stained lips moved to answer. The dead woman in his history proclaimed, wringing out the last remaining drops of her life as she lay there at the edge. Those words took on life, becoming a curse coiled around Sunaga's soul. A curse of severe hatred, like burning hot tongs. A curse of constant poisonous despair. A curse from the dead's rage, lamentation, and sorrow, tormenting Sunaga for his own powerlessness. Those words hounded him to the ends of the earth, because they truly were a curse, one with no means of breaking on this planet. So long as life and death were irreversible, so long as he continued to live. Despair, fear, and shame reached critical mass and spilled from his mind. Sunaga's world was shaken, his soul let out a piercing cry, unable to bear it. With that scream, his world collapsed. Then the sounds of reality pierced Sunaga's mind, calling him awake. Thus, Sunaga Shogo returned from the abyss of his nightmare. He ceased the screaming that had worn his throat raw, gasping to replenish his spent oxygen. His heart was pounding so hard that it might burst. At the remnants of that familiar dream faded, or as the remnants of that familiar dream faded, his awareness of the present returned. Meanwhile, Sunaga caught his breath in bed and collected himself. At the same time, the door opened to the guest room he used for sleep. His nightlight illuminated the abnormal silhouette of a young woman. Carol stood before him, her curious glance asking why Sunaga was just screaming. "It's nothing. I was just dreaming," he answered, already regaining his usual tone and expression, a melancholy gaze and a hard, expressionless face reminiscent of a wooden mask. Silently, he sat up. The deteriorated bed creaked as it was freed from Sunaga's heavy weight. "I'm heading into town. I plan to be back by morning." It was just past 2 a.m. After checking the clock, Sunaga placed the holster carrying his Sig Sauer P226 over his chest. "I'll go with you." "No, you stay here." Rejecting Carol's offer to accompany him, Sunaga put on a slightly soiled field coat. "I want to avoid standing out," which meant fighting probably wasn't his goal tonight. In that case, her own appearance as a witch would just be a hindrance. "All right, be careful." Accepting a command, Carol nodded, then left the room by herself. Glancing at her as she walked out, Sunaga grabbed the keys for his car. Almost 15 minutes later, Sunaga entered the city limits of Pandemonium, cutting the engine just outside the downtown area. He activated the switch on his trap at the same time he shut the door. It was set to ignite 10 kilos of TNT in the trunk if anyone forced the lock. It could be used as a V-bide in a pinch, too. Next, he moved to the main street. He stopped in a rental arms shop illegally occupying the remains of a national DVD rental chain. The clerk's suspicious gaze pierced Sunaga from behind the bulletproof gap in glass. He pretended to browse the shop's wares while using the reflections on the window to check for a tail. After leaving the shop, he turned to the narrow alley and froze. After making sure nothing was moving behind him, he passed through the arcade of the former shopping district that was now lined with restaurants and brothels. After once more checking for a tail, Sunaga turned his feet toward the neighborhood he was meeting Matsumoro Serica in. "Sunaga-san, over here. I was having a drink before you arrived." Serica carried a cup of second-rate sake in one hand as she entered the street from a stall, stuffing her cheeks with yakitori. It was breast meat grilled with spring onions, except it wasn't actually chicken, but crow caught on the streets. "Well, let's go then. Thanks for the meal." After paying her tab, she followed alongside Sunaga with tipsy steps. He drew her closer with his thick left arm. A late-night date with Sunaga-san. Hey. She wasn't frightened by Sunaga's scolding glare, giving him a hearty grin instead. "We'll be less suspicious this way. Even at the best of times, your natural hostility is off the charts." Acknowledging that she had a point, Sunaga fell silent and faced forward. Serica continued touching his arm and shoulder repeatedly. "Yay, I can touch your muscles all I want. I've wanted to do this for a while now. Nihihi, score, score." Serica carried on for a little, but then she glanced up at Sunaga. Hey, Tsunaga-san, what did you used to do on the outside? You don't seem like a civvy, you know. My guess is an aggressive fighting Yakuza member, a mercenary from abroad. So come on, tell me. She brought her face near his ear, hanging from his thick arm. She was close enough to breathe on him, but Tsunaga didn't mind. In fact, he just gave her a cold, bitter smile. Good job pretending to be drunk, though I don't know what you're after by it. Serika wore a look of shock. She gave an exaggerated sigh and released Tsunaga's arm in a show of surrender. Based! Oh my, you had me figured out, but still, it's not like I was planning to sell your personal information to anyone. In fact, you could say it was in completely selfless good faith, or out of female camaraderie. If there's a girl nearby who's interested in you, I figured she'd want to know more about the past of the man she loves. She tried prying at him with that roundabout suggestive phrasing, but he wasn't dealing with her anymore. He was pushing his way through the crowd with his long stride. Serika hastily followed after him. Eventually, they both came to a stop. Diagonally standing before them were multi-purpose buildings. The chemical tones of their signboards displayed the names of shops occupying them. He's apparently off in the fifth floor club over there around this time. That man you mentioned before. Once you find him, lead him outside. Also, contact me in 10 minutes, regardless of your progress. Yeah, leave it to me. Serika headed in the multi-purpose building with light steps. She exchanged light greetings with the staff and other guests coming and going. Her social finesse was just as Tsunaga had judged. 10 minutes passed. There was no call on his phone. Just as Tsunaga was about to head to the entrance, he thought he heard a faint, muffled scream sounding from the rear emergency staircase of the building down an alley. Heading into the back alley, Tsunaga spotted Serika being dragged into a parked station wagon. There were four of them. One noticed Tsunaga rushing toward them and pulled his pistol from his belt. Tsunaga was faster, drawing a Sig Sauer from its holster and pulling the trigger. Red flesh burst from the man's left eye along with the blast. He dropped like a pole. The other three men in the wagon were desperately trying to remove Serika's bottoms and underwear, leaving them defenseless. They all heard the gunshot, but Tsunaga was already behind them. His right hand held a tactical pen in place of a gun. The tip of the metal ballpoint pen came to a rounded point shaped like a rifle bullet. It was a discreet weapon with weight and hardness designed to be used as a stabbing implement. Tsunaga quickly stabbed its pointed end into the three men trying to get away from Serika, one after another. He aimed for their pressure points in the femur, nape, and flank. They wouldn't die right away, though the unbared thrust to their pressure points left everyone disabled and writhing in pain. His quick work took under 5 seconds. Is one of these him? Serika was in shock after her narrow escape, but she nodded. Which one? Serika pointed at one of the fallen men. Tsunaga drew his Sig Sauer again and fired into the heads of the remaining two, one shot each through the back of their skulls. Whoa! We only have business with the one. Tsunaga's expression went unchanged, and a few moments later, Serika nodded. After considering the fate that would have awaited her with one false move, she held no shred of sympathy for the dead. Together, they stood the remaining man up. After peering at his face while he groaned in pain, Tsunaga interrogated him with a tone as still as water. You were one of the security guards stationed at the abandoned factory. However, on the day of the raid, you escaped their fate because you were in charge of transporting the witch. The man's pallor visibly changed as Tsunaga jumped straight to the heart of the matter with no preamble. Still, he held his tongue. I want to know the location the witch was transported to. Was it? Sunna pointed off in a direction. Beyond his finger towered a cylindrical high-rise taller than the buildings around it, piercing the night sky. Slumville? She was taken inside, wasn't she? Cantel's pandemonium. All the evil forces swirling in that city were centered around that tower. While that wasn't openly true, it was common knowledge, almost an unwritten law in this city. Therefore, it was a reasonable deduction that the ringleader behind the secret witch hunts carried out in pandemonium would be found there too. Sunica's interrogation aimed to confirm that deduction as veritable fact. That's why I used Serica's information to flush out the stooges involved in the witch hunts. I see. You're the one behind the raid. His pain finally subsiding, the man started regaining his insolent attitude. He glared up at Sunica and Serica with hatred in his eyes. You're already dead, man, because our boss is going to find and torture you to death. Same with that woman there. I'll ask again, did you transport the witch to Slumville? Like I tell you! Reckless and angry at the pain he suffered, the man gave a threatening, wide-eyed glare. Sunica took up the man's right hand. He positioned his tactical pen between the man's index and middle fingers. The man's pallor changed as he realized Sunaga's intent. He tried to twist away from the pen. Sunica refused to allow it, seizing the man's right hand between his and the instrument and tightening his grip. Serica averted her eyes. The finger bone snapped along the metal pole between Sunica's palms. The man's choked scream echoed. I'll ask again. Did you transport the witch to Slumville? Sunica repeated the same question word for word. The man nodded over and over, tears and drool streaming down his face. With complete disregard for the man sobbing in pain and fear, Sunica turned to Serica. What should we do with this man? You can decide. Please kill him, he knows our faces. Serica said with a pale expression, staring at the man. As soon as she answered, Sunica shoved the muzzle of his gun in the man's mouth and pulled the trigger. His wailing stopped with a wet blast. If you're dropping out, now's your chance. You can take all the money we currently have. Sunica asked as he put his gun away. After a moment of silence, Serica shook her head. But I just killed a man. I said to kill him and he died because of it. That's the same as killing him myself, right? Her eyes looked down through the gun smoke at the corpses with red splatters under their skulls. That paltry amount isn't worth the price of staining my hands. I need at least a billion or two. If I don't leave with that amount, it'll just leave a bad taste in my mouth. I want to be able to forget everything that happened in this city and live happily. So I can't drop out. It's not enough yet. A hint of something akin to hatred tinged her expression. Behind it lay Serica's obsession with money and her creed. Everyone is bound by money, even if they hate it. For Serica, peace and happiness could be measured only with money. This girl acted carefree was still another wretched denizen of the city. We're leaving. Expressionless, Sunica turned his back on the corpses and started walking off, as if he hadn't been listening to any of her conflicted feelings. Afterwards, he scoured the city with Serica for information on Slumville. Once he found some leads, he charged Serica with following up on them before parting ways. He headed for the spot where his car was parked to head back. His wristwatch showed it was almost 4:30 in the morning. Even the sleepless city was down to sparse foot traffic. He cut through the sparsely lit pre-drawn shopping district. There, his eyes paused on a pack of men Several hours had passed since his return to the mansion in the mountains. Carol and Wilma had been waiting in the mansion when Sunica stepped out of the area used as a bedroom and called them together in the living room. Serica and Gloria were nowhere to be seen. The former was operating in the city under the orders Sunica gave her last night, and the latter popped in and out whenever she pleased, so they couldn't reach her. I'll explain our plan now. Map of the city was spread out over the rosewood table. He pointed to a spot in the new commercial district. This is known as Slumville. Seems this is the place we ultimately have to do something about. He emphasized we, and Wilma caught on to his intentions. You mean this is where your interests overlap with mine then? Yeah. Yes, after your comrades are hunted down by the witch hunters, they're temporarily stored in ruined factories like the one from the other day and then transported here. Ultimately, they're dragged before a crowd of base spectators and executed. That corrupt cycle is the underground system keeping the city functional. The enemy Sunaga pursued was the man or organization running it. With that connection now proven, Sunaga and Wilma's targets were one and the same. However, while this building may be central to the witch hunters, we still don't know what's going on inside or what their reasons are at this time. Therefore, I'm going to try infiltrating this enemy base. What's the layout? Where do we need to go? What's the person we need to kill look like? I want to get a grasp on as much of that information as possible. This time, Carol reacted to his words. What should I do? Her query seemed almost desperate. This eccentric witch always placed Sunaga at the center of her actions, as if she would do anything he ordered her to. If she were human, it would be called excessive dependency. But Carol was a witch. Even if she acted like human, common sense didn't apply to her mental makeup. Sunaga understood that her self-sacrificing actions, like the way she risked her life the other day, came not for love or faith, but her unique nature as a witch. Even if it seemed illogical to him, he figured it must have some meaning, just like other odd animal behaviors. You'll be on standby outside like last time. In fact, if I need your help, it means I've slipped up. After a short pause, Carol nodded. Then Sunaga turned to Wilma with a sudden thought. Wilma, do you know the faces of every one of these disasters' witches? Yes. What about it? Wilma nodded, but she couldn't seem to grasp his intention. Then, Sunaga asked her about the witch he saw last night during their raid, describing her looks. If Wilma knew every witch, then it shouldn't be hard for her to pin her down. No, I don't know of her. As far as I know, none of us fit that description. What? The words that came back were unexpected. Wilma narrowed her brow in suspicion, ruminating on that ominous statement. Just as you know, we all get our names from the humans in this city. Partly because all the disasters' witches are women, and partly due to the terrifying threat they pose, it's been customary to bestow a female name used for a historic hurricane on them. Wilma listed off all their names. Sandy, Isabel, and Gloria were on her list, but then she quietly looked at the last name on her list, Carol. The last one to appear and be named is you, Carol. There hasn't been a single new witch in this city since then. Then the witch I saw isn't known yet? A Jane Doe, an anonymous witch. Sunaga's sighting brought up the idea of such a strange being, along with a new mystery for Kanto's pandemonium. Unless you or I are mistaken, that sounds right. I'm personally curious about this, though. I'll look into it. Sunaga nodded and ended that topic for the time being. It wasn't that pertinent to the task at hand, anyway. The only thing he needed to be thinking about now was how to effectively shed blood. S- Serica will contact us by night. I'll be moving out after that, but let me go over the details now. Seneca began outlining the plan of action to both witches, the illusory smell of blood to be shed already in his nose. Meanwhile, the gears of evil continued spinning without rest. Regardless of who they served in the end, their cruel revolutions never ceased, capturing and crushing another witch. Their captive, Edna, was dragged into a different room than yesterday's. They were persistent with regular bloodletting, ensuring her body still remained robbed of its strength and supernatural power. She was shoved into a room where her arms and legs were bound in shackles on chains. The chains were wound around spools, pulling her limbs in the opposite directions and holding her suspended in midair. It was a disgraceful position, but Nana's mind didn't have the capacity to be enraged at this point. While tortures awaited her, her mind was occupied with dark, heartless anxieties in that vein. Now, I keep thinking this might show a adult scene. In that case, I'll be heading out, and we'll get back with Maggot Bates. There's so many I'm doing right now, but we'll get back with Maggot Bates a little later. And I guess it'll be the Grimlord, and I am out of here.